All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
And welcome to the X Zone, everyone. I am Rob McConnell, and for the next 4 hours, I am your host. I am your guide as together we cross the time-space continuum to this place that I call the X Zone. It's a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. And the X Zone comes to you 5 nights a week from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern, right here on the X Zone Broadcast Network, Talkstar Radio Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, and other fine broadcast affiliates and audio platforms around the world. Now, if you'd like to send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com. On all social media sites, X Zone Radio TV, and for the broadcast schedule of the X Zone Broadcast Network, visit our website at www.xzbn.net. And for those of you who would like to watch the X Zone TV channel, it is exclusive to our good friends at Simul TV and now is available on the brand new Atari system. Visit www.simultv.com. X Zone Nation, my first guest tonight is Margaret Doner. She is a past life regressionist, therapist, angelic channel, and healer. She has assisted clients for over 25 years to help them remember and integrate the wisdom of their souls. Margaret's books include The Path of the Human Incarnated Angel and Starseed, Archangel Speak, Merlin's Handbook for Seekers, and Starseeds and Merlin's War, The Battle Between the Family of Light and the Family of the Apocalypse. Now, her goal is to assist the Starseed community into the awakening by sharing her own journey and the journey of her clients and friends with a wider audience. For more information on Margaret, visit her website at margaretdoner.com. That's margaretdoner.com. And Margaret, to you, welcome back to the X Zone. Great having you with us tonight.
Thank you very much. I just want to let you know that the one book that you had mentioned, which is the Merlin's War. Mm-hmm. It's called Merlin's War, The Battle Between the Family of Light and the Family of Dark. So
I'm sorry.
You had mixed up the latest book title with that, so I just wanted to clarify that for people if they were interested in looking that up online.
Well, we're going to make sure we get it right and put it right on the website so we can push as much business as we can to you. And I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Well, it's great talking to you. For the listeners who may be listening to you for the first time here on the ever-growing X Zone Broadcast Network, what is a starseed community?
Well, it really is a broad term for a person that identifies with the idea of being from another planet, I guess you would say, or another star system. And I'm not saying from their current life. So I'm not saying that somebody is saying, I was just on Venus a month ago. But the idea is that your soul, which starseeds believe is immortal, has incarnated other places besides Earth. So they identify with the idea of being a Pleiadian or possibly an Arcturian, or from the Sirius or Andromeda star systems, and often have memories that are not just earthbound, but come from these different star systems. So it's kind of a broad term for anyone who feels or believes that they have incarnated in other places besides just the planet Earth.
Now, what would be some of the signs and symptoms that a person may be an actual starseed, that they may not actually be from this planet?
Well, that's a really good question, because I think there's a lot of different ones. I don't know that you can say there's any one in particular, but oftentimes they have gifts that allow them to more easily contact other dimensions, to perhaps what you think of as telepathic abilities, extra sensory perception, that idea of ESP, or being able to heal, bringing in the ability to heal with frequency. For example, oftentimes someone who has a Pleiadian energetic imprint will be very attracted to sound healing, perhaps healing with color or frequencies. And but particularly, I think for the Pleiadians, they're very attuned to the idea of sound, and many of them are quite beautiful musicians, but they'll blend that with the ability to heal. They understand intuitively that our physical body and our chakras have vibrational frequencies that react automatically to particular pitches and tones and sounds, and they'll use those sounds either with their voice or an instrument to stimulate a chakra, perhaps like a chakra being an energy center of your body, and to try to bring it back into balance and to help your body to heal. So that would be an example of somebody very often who would say, oh, I have a Pleiadian gift. Whereas Earth human tends to be more what we think of it as third dimensional, meaning that they relate to the five sense matrix. If I can see it or I can touch it, it's real. And they have a lot of trouble understanding the idea that even if you can't see something, it exists. It's just in a frequency that's outside the normal visual wavelength frequency. So in general, I would say most starseeds find absolutely no trouble with the idea that reality exists outside of a five-sense matrix, whereas Earth humans tend to really get locked into that idea that if I can't see it or I can't touch it, it doesn't exist. So I think that's one of the primary things that would differentiate someone who identifies as a starseed from someone who identifies as just or purely human, Earth human.
Margaret, what was it that started you on your quest, your crusade in this area?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I mean, I think most starseeds, and I consider myself to be in that category as well, I think most of us feel we were actually born that way, or even came in as what is called a walk-in, meaning not a birth-in, but came later in, which is another whole conversation. I don't want to digress into that right now. But even from the time we're very young, we seem to have memories or abilities that a lot of us feel that other people around us don't have or they don't understand. So we feel a little different that way. And but for me, the real journey as an adult came from when I met somebody that I had many past lives with a lot of very profound karma with. And I met him when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and it began to trigger past life images for me spontaneously. And I began to understand that I had known that person not only in my current life, but for the first lifetime I saw was Victorian. And then I came to understand through all the 25, you know, plus years I've been doing this work, many, many other lives, and to have a deeper understanding of our karma. But it began to open up for me the idea that I had other lives. And I always talk about how Shirley MacLaine, Out on a Limb, that original book of hers, really, I think it was one of her very first. And I read that and I remember just crying and thinking, wow, somebody else actually understands and sees the world the way I do. So she was for me a sort of a lifeline, I think, in my 20s and my early 30s. And then I went on to study with Roger Wolger, who is he's since passed on, but he wrote Other Lives, Other Selves. He was Jungian and a real scholar. And I studied intensively with him for 2 years, very intensively. He required, it wasn't just like a weekend or a week, you know, but it was, you had to get your own karma kind of cleared out and your own fears cleared out. And then I decided I wanted to help others. So that was back in the 90s, the mid-90s, that I really started to put my, you know, those visions I had had when I was younger into a healing context and be able to help others. So I'm very, very wedded to past life regression as a healing tool for the soul. And starseeds have particularly a lot of karma and often a lot of trauma and wounding that goes back. Really, I call them like the ancient ones, really ancient souls, because they've been around for a long time.
So am I to understand that not only can people carry baggage from one relationship in this present life to the next and then to the next, but they can also carry baggage from previous lives? And it must be very confusing for these people who are inundated with all these different thoughts, all these different emotions, to try and get a grip on what's going on.
I think it is initially. And I think the whole idea of integrating the soul is about putting these sort of puzzle pieces together. And in the end, you get to know yourself, you know, that whole idea of know thyself.
Right.
It comes from this recollecting of these pieces and understanding yourself more deeply as to what is it that's, why am I always triggered by, you know, that thing, or why do I have this phobia? Why do I have this fear, or that person is always triggering me? And there's something so magical when you start doing past life regression in a serious way, and you begin to see and understand how the magic of how you were brought back together energetically with certain people, with the express idea to heal what perhaps have been these traumas and these wounds.
Margaret, we're going to have to take a commercial break here. Margaret, please stand by. We've got to take our first break. ExoNation, our guest this hour is Margaret Doner, and her website is margaretdoner.com. And we'll be back on the other side of this break as we continue here in the Exxon with yours truly, Rob McConnell, from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. Once again, if you'd like to send me an email, exxon@exxonradiotv.com. Margaret Doner is my guest. We'll be back on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
Nobody knows what she's holding back. Wearing the same dress she wore yesterday. She has the bruises with her linen and lace. Oh. The teacher wonders, but she doesn't.
Welcome back, everyone. Margaret Doner is our special guest this hour, www.margaretdoner.com. Margaret, what was it like the first time you yourself had a past life regression and you realized that you had not only been here on this present existence now, but your lives go back and back and back?
I think for me, mm-hmm. when I first started working with Roger Wolger, I remember saying I felt like I had come home and that the world finally made sense for me. That all this time, everything had always seemed chaotic and nothing had made sense. But when I began to really understand past lives and karma, and the cords of energy that link us to, you know, one another and to different souls repeatedly, mm-hmm. Things fell into place for me. And I really felt like I was sort of coming home. And now, many years later, I suspect it's because I felt like I was coming home to myself, that I was beginning to reclaim pieces and part of myself. But it was such an empowering and wonderful feeling to have this, you know, even if it's something uncomfortable, and we all know how it can be, when we don't want to look at it, but it's true, there's a liberating feeling to truth. So even if you're encountering some, you know, a horrible past life that where you're a victim or mm-hmm. you're a perpetrator, but it fits right into your karmic relationships. And people, you know, when I'm doing passive aggression, you know, to watch somebody kind of go, oh, my God, you know, I get it now. I get why my mother and I, you know, fought like that all the time. It makes so much sense now. There's just like this healing that happens. So I think that was my feeling when I first really started to do this work in a serious way, was even the difficult stories I realized were a path toward healing my own wounds.
Is there any connection between all the people that you've had the opportunity of meeting and helping with their past lives and helping them to better understand and to realize what is going on in their life? Is there any similarity between all these cases, or are they all totally different?
No, I think, you know, that's a really interesting question. I mean, of course, each person is to some degree unique, mm-hmm. but I can't even believe how there's so much universal at the same time. There's so much universal. I'll give you an example, you know, that rings a bell right off, which is people having stories where they were burned as witches,
oh my
or
gosh.
Stoned to death as witches or healers.
Mm-hmm.
That story comes up a lot for people.
Really?
And, yeah, you know, because starseeds tended to be the healers and the witches. They tended to be the ones that were, you know, put to death because they understood how to lay on hands and heal. Or in this day and age, we'd call it Reiki. And that
yeah.
day, you would have been called a witch, you know? And so that story is so common among people. And it's really interesting when people go back to Atlantis, and they usually go back to the end times of Atlantis. Not always, but very often the trauma that first comes up with those stories has to do with the misuse of energy, a power, what we would think of as, you know, someone being a wizard. And they understood how to harness energy and began to direct it. And then ego got in the way and harm. A lot of people go back to lives where they feel like they were a perpetrator. They carry a lot of guilt because with the power also came, you know, this ego, and with the ego came destruction. And so that's another one. Those are really fascinating stories that tend to repeat. And then, of course, just the, you know, the things of you know, losing a child, yeah. You know, the trauma of, I mean, you think about the history of the human race as, you know, with disease and starvation. And of course, there's a lot of wounding around World War II and the Holocaust and the camps and, you know, that whole piece. And the guilt of people that joined the Nazis, you know, being German citizens and not having their heart in it, but having, you know, felt that they had to do that, obviously, you know, and then carrying a terrible guilt, those come up. So, you know, yes, there are repeated themes and stories, but of course everybody feels unique to them, and you know, there's slight differences. But I would agree with you that there are themes that come up.
When these people come to you with these problems and they discover the connection, they discover the pattern, they discover the reality of their past lives to their present life, how do you help them to solve these issues or reconcile these issues or to face these issues?
It's very simple and at the same time very difficult because it's forgiveness. And as we all know, very easy word to say and a very, very difficult word to actually put into action. And I think, my opinion, when we heard Jesus came down anyway, supposedly that he said, you know, forgive them, they know not what they do.
Right.
A lot of people are very angry and confused about that because they'll say, well, I can't forgive my father for beating me and my mother and my, you know, siblings.
Right.
I can never forgive him. And I've come to this conclusion that it's not that you forgive the action, that I don't think Jesus was saying, oh, yeah, it's fine, you can crucify people. That was fine what they did. What he's saying is that, in my opinion, is that what you're forgiving is their soul is so possessed by darkness that they do not know what they do. They have become infiltrated by such darkness and dark feelings and hatred and whatever, and fear, really. I mean, you can make a case that that's a type of fear, and that they don't know what they do. And so you try and realize that that person is, in a sense, suffering in great darkness, and you try to find a way to forgive them in their soul, but you never have to say, oh, I forgive the action, because that becomes impossible, and that's not what I think is meant. And when you forgive the soul, you become free karmically, which I think was another part that Jesus was trying to say, is that you want to burn these karmic energy cords, and only through forgiving them, and we all know that, are we free. Because when we hate somebody, we're still tied to them energetically, and they have control over us. And if we want to free ourselves from them, we must figure out a way to let them go through forgiveness. And I found past life therapy can be helpful in that as well, because oftentimes we have been a perpetrator as well. The karma is going back and forth, And we need to forgive ourselves. And in forgiving ourselves, it makes it easier to forgive others. So that's, I guess that's a very long explanation, but I wanted to try to be clear about that because I do think it's important. It's something so many people, all of us really universally wrestle with that. You know, how do I forgive? How do I let go? How do I get clear of these, you know, toxic relationships?
I would imagine that one of the largest problems facing any member of society these days is the matter of, you know, we are in such turmoil, whether it's political, whether it's financial. Look what's happening with COVID. Right. How do we justify the different changes, the different griefs that we all face? And where does being a star seed come into play here?
Well, okay, so this is, of course, none of this is a simple answer.
Yeah.
But I think, first of all, I've come to really believe in karma, and not as retribution, but because energy will always need to balance itself, that the universe will, if you want to call it the universe, the energy, the chi, the God, force, whatever, will always try to come into some type of homeostasis, which is a word for, you know, in your own physical body, homeostasis is like healing or balance, right? And so I think that that's really what karma is about. As you sow, you're going to reap. And so we are not only involved in our own personal karma, but we're also involved in a collective consciousness karma and a global karma. And we'd never want to take responsibility. People deny the shadow of their own individual soul, and so it can't heal. And then they push it out onto someone else. People who, and Jung said this, right? I mean, he was such a advocate of this, is the more you deny your shadow, in a sense, the more dangerous you become, because you're going to project it out and tell everybody else is the perpetrator, and you're the poor me victim, right? You become this poor me victim, and then everybody else has to be the bad guy so you can continue that role. And that's just a toxic, horrible place to be. So many people are caught in that horrible place, but they become the worst, the poor me victim becomes the worst perpetrator because they're just draining everybody. They're like psychic vampires, you know? And I think that we have a global collective karma. And the book that you had mentioned with the apocalypse is hasn't been published yet, but it's just now going to my publisher, and it's called Merlin's Guide to the Apocalypse.
All right, well, let's talk about this book in a few minutes when I come back from this news break. Exo Nation, Margaret Doner is our special guest. Her website is margaretdoner.com. And if you'd like to send me an email with any guest suggestions, or maybe you'd like to have your very own radio show here on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, send me an email. I'll certainly pass it to the powers to be, because I know they're always looking for great programming. Send me an email to X-Zone at xzoneradiotv.com. It's been that email address now for 32 years. Wow, 32 years of talking to the most interesting people in the world. Each and every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern. And then on the weekends, we play the best of at www.xzbn.net. I'll be back on the other side of this news break with my guest, Margaret Doner, on the other side, as we continue investigating the world of the paranormal and the science of parapsychology. Don't go away. Welcome back. Margaret Doner is our special guest this hour, www.margaretdoner.com. Margaret, before we went to the news break at the bottom of the hour, we were just starting to talk about your book entitled Merlin's War. Tell us more.
Well, actually, I was just bringing up not Merlin's War, but Merlin's Guide to the Apocalypse, which is just about to be released.
Oh, and I see.
The reason I brought it up was because you mentioned this idea that everybody is just feeling like they're drowning in grief and difficulty right now. And I think that what's really important to understand is that we have sown this. We have sown this. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't like to look at that. We sort of have this idea as humans, I think native cultures are much more attuned to the idea that you have to live in balance with nature, right? That give and take and that creation destruction, paradigm. But modern man is just consume, consume, consume. We're getting further and further away from community. We're throwing out junk by the bucket loads, manufactured junk and throw it away. And I, in my latest book, doing research and so forth, I came across Baotou, China in Mongolia. It's where they're producing the metal compounds needed for all this technology, but it's completely turned it into a toxic waste dump, and nobody talks about that. You might have wind turbines, but look what you've done. If you see, to produce the components needed for all of this, and then what do? We just chuck it into the landfills. And I think what we're actually in, for me, the apocalypse is a time of revelation, but it's a time where we really have to look at what we've created, what is our collective shadow, and how are we going to clean it up? How are we going to change our behavior and our thought processes so we don't go into such a duality and see each other as enemy and just consume and trash thoughtlessly. So I think we're just reaping what we've sown, and we don't like that, and it's miserable. But then we need to change it. I think then we need to take responsibility not only for our personal karma, but for our collective karma, and it didn't come out of nowhere,
There are a lot of people who actually believe that it's gone past the point of no return. I, on the other hand, believe it's never too late. How do you see it?
I agree with you, because it depends on what you're talking about, I guess, on some level. What are the parameters you're talking about beyond the point of no return? But if you and I have an immortal soul, and our soul is doesn't die, and it reincarnates and experiences things on different dimensions, then there's always the potential to learn and to grow and to be better, and to be more integrated and to be more loving. And that potential will always exist as long as we have a soul. And I think the most frightening thing for me is transhumanism. And the more I look into transhumanism, which is this idea that the human race will not survive unless we merge with computers. And they are looking forward to what they call the singularity and immortality. So they believe by 2045 that we will be immortal and we will be basically cyborgs, half computers and half humans. And they're getting rid in the process of that divine spark, which, yes, it does create the passion that leads to conflict, but at the same time, it creates the passion that leads to Beethoven, right, and Mozart.
Sure.
So, right, which comes from a place that I don't think a robot will ever reproduce. And most people are unaware of how far along transhumanism is. They think it's sci-fi, but when they research it and they see the robots in Japan that are now able to function like humans, and they use them, you know, they have sex robots that actually orgasm, and they have robots that can be bartenders and pour 300 drinks in an hour, and they have robots that serve as receptionists and robots that serve as caretakers, and they're getting more and more lifelike and more human. I don't think it's very far away. And the smartest people on the planet, like Elon Musk and his Neuralink, where he now, you know, they now have the ability to link the human brain into the computer with Neuralink. You know, these things that are coming so quick and fast, to me, are even more frightening than anything environmentally that we're doing or pandemic. But again, if you're a cyborg, you know, you're probably not going to have to worry about COVID. So what's the payoff, you know? And so to me, that to me is quite apocalyptical.
I agree.
It's been one of the things I've tried to sort of get people to understand so that they can actually resist it.
You know, I agree with robots doing mundane, repetitive jobs like they have in the manufacturing industries right now. I agree with that. But are we coming to a point in society, as we did so many years ago with the Tower of Babel, where you had humanity wanting to build this building up to so that they can, you know, go into the heavens. And what happened was divine intervention. Is it possible that this is the scenario we're looking at again? Is this the cyborg human factor? Is this another example of good versus evil?
I think you're right. I do. And I think that whenever mankind, whether it was back in Atlantis or actual histories on other planets, there goes the starseed thing again.
Yeah.
But whenever we take technology beyond our spiritual development and beyond our emotional and intellectual and spiritual development, so that technology is more developed than we are as a species, we go into a deep trouble. And unfortunately, the humans are very, very you're very young souls. You know, humans are not old souls. Starseeds might be, but most humans are not. And they're operating from very much ego and a very limited consciousness perspective. And when you put, you know, tremendous technology in the hands of somebody unevolved, you're in danger. It's clear.
You know, if people don't think technology,
that's where we are.
Yeah, if people do not believe that technology is taking over more and more and more, all you need to do is look what Facebook is doing, what Google is doing, and other platforms are doing to humanity. You know, they're feeding us what they want, or the powers to be want us to know what they want us to believe. Subliminal advertising runs rampant on the internet, and yet nobody does anything about it, because it's the old Wizard of Id, you know, the golden rule. Those who have the gold makes the rules.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's the whole issue of being extremely undeveloped, in that if we were operating from a place where we thought about community, we realized not that I have to be smarter and better and immortal, but that I am just a cog in this amazing organism called God.
Yes.
And I don't use that, I'm just talking about energy, mm-hmm. source, chi, if I destroy the petri dish, right, I destroy myself.
Yeah.
And I think we're not evolved enough yet to think in community. When people join communities, they're always thinking, what is that community going to do for me? That's what I've found. And I've wondered why communities fall apart. But it's because they're not raised like perhaps, a Native American tribe mm-hmm. hundreds of years ago, where everybody has to focus on the survival of the community for the self to survive, so that you know you have to bring something to that community.
Yep.
So that you can all flourish. We've gone so far away from that it's just about the ego, and I can get more than you, I can be more beautiful than you, all these very young soul, baby soul concepts that, you put these very dangerous technologies. And if you look at, some of the stuff being done, you can't even understand it. You can't even read the explanation of these transhumanists. They're the smartest people on the planet. They're not human. They're so freaking crazy intelligent.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're intelligent. I think what they're trying to do is it's a matter of self-preservation with these people. They don't care about the rest of society. They just care about themselves, how they can perceive and how they can preserve themselves, how they can get this life to keep lasting so that they can keep the money, the riches, the power. They need to be stopped.
Right, right.
Like we're playing with danger here.
It's like a vampire, mm-hmm. right? It's a vampire because you just described what vampires
yep,
are, right?
Exactly.
These immortal beings that just keep collecting riches for themselves and are parasites.
Yep. And who would want to live forever? I wouldn't.
Well, I know. I agree with you. I think, though, that, it's so interesting because I was just trying to find, I just want to give you an idea. This Dr. Natasha Vitamore.
All right. Why don't we do this? Tell me the idea when we come back, the story about this
okay.
doctor, because we're getting
okay.
really close to our final break. And explanation, okay. my guest this hour is Margaret Doner. Her website is margaretdoner.com. And if you'd like to find out more about the X-Zone Broadcast Network and the fine programming we have available for you 24/7, 365 with our compliments and the compliments of our advertisers and affiliates, just go to www.xzbn.net. And of course, you can always send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com. And for the X-Zone TV channel, which is now, according to the numbers that we received from Simul TV, being viewed by 74 million people around the world, visit www.simultv.com. Margaret and I will be back on the other side of this break as we wrap up this hour here in the X-Zone with yours truly, Rob McConnell, from our broadcast center and studios in beautiful Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. Welcome back, everyone. Margaret Doner is our special guest this hour. Her website is margaretdoner.com. Margaret, just before we go into our final break, you were going to start telling us about a doctor, and I asked you to hold on until we came back. So please continue.
Well, we were talking about transhumanism, so I just wanted to mention, you know, these well-known, internationally known transhumanists, and I'd said Dr. Natasha Vita-Morey, and she's known for breakthroughs in cryonics, and I don't know if you guys all know what cryonics are, but Alcor is a life extension foundation where, you know, that whole idea of getting ultra-cold temperatures to preserve your human body, right? Mm-hmm. And then they bring you back when the technology has come around to heal you.
Isn't that also called cryogenics?
You know?
Isn't that also called cryogenics?
That's what I was saying, yeah. Did I misspeak? I'm sorry. Yeah, cryogenics. Mm-hmm. So that, these, you know, these amazing, you know, technologies, these amazing abilities, and you know, and they're not... These are not, you know, these are not stupid people. Elon Musk is not a stupid person, you know. So he, you know, this Neuralink integrates the human brain with AI, and it allows the AI to circulate through your veins and arteries using a neural lace interface. And it's like a mesh that grows with your brain, creates a wireless brain computer interface. So this is where this stuff is going. And I just think it's important. I think, you know, what happens is we're all focused so much on survival, especially now. And then behind the scenes, of course, are all of these other, you know, sci-fi kinds of things. But I do think that they're important for us to focus on as well, because I don't know. I just think that I have a belief that, you know, I've batted around a bit, which is that, which would be right down your alley in this show, which is that those of us, you know, there are a lot of us starseed, quote-unquote starseeds, who actually have come from the future. And from a, you know, from that point of view, in other words, we, being multidimensional beings, are trying to stop this transhumanist future. And I know it sounds like some kind of a sci-fi movie, you know, The Matrix kind of thing, but... But I really think that I don't have a good feeling about the idea of making humans half robot and then making machines smarter than humans, which Elon Musk says will happen and is inevitable, that these machines will take over and become smarter than the human beings. We will not be able to handle them. And we're actually inviting it. It's just like that Terminator, you know, stuff. So I think we need to, you know, when people start to say, oh, yeah, it's going to be great because you put that chip in your body and they'll have all your health information on it. So when you are in the, you know,
an accident,
ambulance, you're right, and you're in a coma, they'll be able to just swipe that, all your data, and it'll be there in the chip, and we start inviting all of this chipping within our body, which is probably inevitable eventually. I'm, you know, then what have you got? You've got that neural lace interface in your brain, and then who owns you? Then you don't, you know, then you're gone, because then you don't own yourself at all. So I do think, as sci-fi as it sounds, and perhaps as useless as it seems to people to think about that when we're in the middle of these very human problems like COVID and financial issues that people are suffering from, I hope people don't turn a blind eye to this idea of, oh, no, you know, chip, it's great. Let's put a chip in me.
Well, as it is now,
it's inevitable. Though.
As it is now, every one of us carries a chip on us in our wallet, whether it's for your ATM card, whether it's for your passport, whether it's for your driver's license. You know, so mind you, when it comes to carrying the card that has the chip in it in your wallet, there are so many people who are paranoid because Big Brother is watching. Big Brother knows too much. Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you've If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. It's that simple. Because when you go and put gas in your car, they know where you are. When you go to your ATM, they know. When you go to the grocery store to pay using your credit card, it's all trackable. So big deal.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's absolutely right. We're already, cameras are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is that if, in fact, society becomes so massively restrictive that you can't live within it, there will be no way to escape it. So that's the problem. So if they start regulating people to the point that they are intensely uncomfortable and feel that all their civil liberties, not just some of them, but all of them have been taken. And now, you know, then it really does become that sort of 1984 world, mm-hmm. exactly, where, you know, you're nowhere can you be who you are, nowhere can you breathe, nowhere can you have a shadow or a dissenting thought. And I think we need to be able to have places where we can explore without other people always watching.
But it's going to be the third world countries who will have the advantage then, because who's going to want to chip somebody who lives in a third world?
Well, you know, there's some, you know, thoughts about all of that too, in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, once I don't know, but you certainly don't need the population we have once you have the robots up and running to do the job.
Well, that brings up a possibility.
People become more and more useless,
sure.
you know, and less useful to those that are looking toward a transhumanist future.
Well, that brings up a question. Is COVID actually a population control agent? What is it, 400,000 Americans died in the last year?
Yeah, it's not doing a very good job if it is, but...
Oh, it's doing a pretty good job, because already there are now four or five different variants of it. You know, we humans are not keeping up with the changes that this virus is doing. You know, we get to a certain point, the virus looks back and says, "Oh, I got to change," and bang, it changes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in writing my last book, I did some research on pandemics, and mm-hmm. pandemics have killed far more people historically, you know, obviously since ancient times on up than war, you know, than, you know, pandemics have wiped, in fact, as we know, Black Plague wiped out, you know, 2/3 of Europe. So pandemics are great population control, but whether somebody is doing it, mm-hmm. Or whether it's just happening because it just happens naturally on this earth, you know, every so many hundreds or thousands of years, you know, certainly, I don't know if people know, but we're in the sixth extinction event right now, according to scientists. There have been five, we're in the sixth, and it's man-made, and they acknowledge it. So, you know, we know the species, other species, animals, insects are going extinct at enormous rates. So, you know, this is also not new, right? There have been extinction events where 75, even 95% of whatever was on the earth got wiped out. So is it natural? Is it being done? You know, we don't have the inside knowledge. We can have our theories, but we don't have the inside knowledge to actually be able to prove it in a court of law, you know.
Well, do we need the court? Do we actually have to bring it to a court of law, or will the court of public opinion suffice in this case? Because what I'm seeing here is that the human race is not as smart as it thinks it is. Because if this little virus... and any other virus can bring the population of the earth down to its knees.
Right.
You know, what's the sense? So no matter how smart Elon Musk is, if he's that smart, he would have come up with an antidote or a vaccine for the COVID. He didn't. Or they'd come up with a cure for cancer. They don't. They are self-centered people who only give a damn about themselves.
And he's ready to go off to Mars because he knows. He knows. Oh, God. I think I'll just bail out. So I'll take all my billions and do my space exploration and go to Mars.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, exactly. He could use all that money for so many better things.
Sure. I'm going to tell you something. If he's that smart and if he was planning on escaping, he wouldn't let the world know about it. He'd keep his mouth shut, pack everything up, and just disappear. But he enjoys the glory. He enjoys the media, the media attention. And you know what? When he's dead, when he's dead, who's going to give a care? I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I think, isn't that what you're saying, is that human ego is always the downfall?
Yep.
Human ego is always the downfall, and that's just, seems to repeat over and over and over. That I was saying earlier in our discussion about, even in Atlantis, the wizards and their misuse of power and the ego and the feeling of power and using it for, you know, not to help but in the end to harm, and you know, that's that lack of community, but the feeling instead of, oh, I'm going to, you know, show off because I can have my own rocket company.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, feed the hungry, take care of the poor, educate people, make sure people have a roof over their head, that they're warm at night, that their tummies are full.
Yeah.
Children are going to school hungry, for God's sake. Look at the homeless situation crisis. And yet these people would rather spend all this money on going to Mars than helping people here on Earth. And that goes for NASA. That goes for a lot of the major corporations out there. All they want is your money. All they want is power. All they want is the upper hand when it comes to making political decisions. They don't give a damn about you, I, or John Q. Public.
I wouldn't disagree, that's for sure. I wouldn't disagree with you. I think, you know, that is the problem. That whole idea that, you know, money is the end all and be all, and I got to have more of it than anyone else.
In my opinion, money is the root of all evil. Margaret, you and I have to say so long for tonight. I want to thank you ever so much for joining us. Let our listeners know how they can find out more about you, and give them your website.
Yes, it's my name, Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T, donor, donor.com. And there's a contact form there, and also just more information about my books. If anyone's interested, in a few videos as well.
All right, Margaret, thank you so much for joining us. Always a great pleasure talking to you and your family. Nothing but the very best for this upcoming year.
You too, hon, and good healing.
Thank you so much, Margaret. It's always a great pleasure talking to you. Come back and visit us
soon. Oh, you too.
Bye-bye.
I'd love to visit you again. Thank you, Rob. I really loved it.
Thank you. Thank you, my dear friend. And Exo Nation, once again, if you'd like more information about my guest this hour, it's been a great hour. It flew by so fast. A lot of great topics, conversation. Her website is margaretdonor.com. Now, I'll be back on the other side of this commercial break with the news as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to send me an email, it's X-Zone@X-ZoneRadioTV.com. On all social media sites, X-Zone Radio TV. For the X-Zone Broadcast Network, XZBN.net. And for the X-Zone TV channel on Simul TV, SimulTV.com, where the X-Zone is now part of Simul TV on the Atari new system. We'll be back. Don't go away.